The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene. An audio summary narrated for the AREIO Book Library. This came out in 2018, 20 years after The 48 Laws of Power, and it is a substantially different book by the same author. It is long, around 600 pages, and it consists of 18 chapters, each stating one law of human nature, each anchored in a long biographical case study, and each ending with the constructive version of the trait, rather than only the pathological one. The premise is that human beings are governed by forces that operate almost entirely below awareness. We believe we act from reason and choose our own direction. Greene's claim is that most of what we do is driven by emotion, by early conditioning, by the need for status, by envy, by the desire to belong, and by an image of ourselves that we defend without noticing we are defending it. The laws are his attempt to name those forces, and here is the thing that distinguishes it from his earlier work, stated plainly because it changes how you should read the book. The primary target is you. Greene says repeatedly that the first application of every law is to yourself, that you will find each of these traits in your own behavior, and that the person most likely to be manipulated by your narcissism, your envy, or your defensiveness is you. The reading of other people comes second. That is a real shift. The 48 Laws is a manual for operating on other people. This is a manual for self-knowledge, which then gives you a more accurate picture of everyone else, worth being precise about, because readers who came for more of the same are often surprised. The 48 Laws of Power is a moral by design. It describes tactics, it declines to comment on whether they should be used, and the successful manipulators are the heroes of its anecdotes. It is short, punchy, and quotable, and it has been banned in a great many prisons. The Laws of Human Nature is not that. It is a psychology book with a moral position, and the position is that the traits it describes are universal, that pretending you are free of them is the actual danger, and that the mature version of each trait is available if you stop denying you have it. Each chapter has a structure that makes this explicit. The law is stated. A biographical case runs at length. A section called Keys to Human Nature explains the psychology. Strategies follow, and then, crucially, a final section describes the positive form. Narcissism becomes empathy, aggression becomes controlled ambition, grandiosity becomes a realistic sense of what you can do, short-sightedness becomes long-term perspective. The other difference is intellectual lineage. The 48 Laws draws on Machiavelli, Gratian, and the courts of Renaissance Europe. This one draws on Jung, Freud, attachment theory, evolutionary psychology, and a good deal of Nietzsche. That gives it more depth and also, as the critique will cover, more exposure, because some of that material has not held up well. If you read only one, most people are better served by this one. It is slower and it is more useful. Every chapter follows the same architecture, and knowing it makes 600 pages navigable. First, the law, phrased as an instruction, paired with its negative name. Master your emotional self, the law of irrationality. Confront your dark side, the law of repression. The instruction is what you should do, the law is what happens if you do not. Then a long biographical case, usually 20 pages or so, following a historical figure through the trait. Greene is a very good narrator of a life, and these are the reason the book is readable. Pericles and the Athenian Assembly. The hypnotherapist Milton Erickson, who lost the use of his body to polio and spent a year learning to read people entirely from movement. Howard Hughes and the slow visible progress of a compulsion. Lyndon Johnson working the Senate. Chekhov, born to a violent father, deliberately reconstructing himself. Mary Shelley discovering what envy looks like when it arrives dressed as friendship. Michael Eisner at Disney. Martin Luther King choosing a strategy. Elizabeth I managing an unmanageable court, John D. Rockefeller and the shape of controlled aggression, then Keys to Human Nature, the general psychology, which is where the actual argument lives, then strategies, the practical section, and then the constructive close. The book is designed to be read as chapters rather than cover to cover, and Greene says so. Most readers get more out of taking one law at a time. Here are all 18, with what each actually says. 1. Master your emotional self, the law of irrationality. We believe we are rational and we are not, and the first step is to accept that emotion drives almost all of it. Greene distinguishes low-grade irrationality, which is the constant colouring of judgment by mood, from high grade, which is the flooding that arrives with a strong emotion and produces the decisions you later cannot account for. The practical instruction is to create a gap, recognize the emotion as it arises, refuse to act while it is at its peak, and examine where it actually came from. 2. Transform self-love into empathy. The law of narcissism. We are all somewhere on a spectrum of self-absorption. The work is not to eliminate self-love, which is impossible, but to redirect attention outward often enough that you can actually perceive other people rather than your idea of them. 3. See through people's masks, the law of role-playing. Everyone presents a constructed front. Green's argument is that the front is generally consistent and the leaks are not, so you learn more from involuntary signals, from tone, from what happens in unguarded moments, and above all from behavior over time, than from anything a person tells you about themselves. 4. Determine the strength of people's character, the law of compulsive behavior. This is one of the most useful chapters. Character is formed early, it is largely fixed, and it repeats. The single best predictor of what someone will do is the pattern of what they have already done, and people reliably ignore this because a person's stated intentions are more recent and more vivid than their history. 5. Become an elusive object of desire, the law of covetousness. We want what we do not have and stop wanting it on possession. Applied to yourself, this is a warning about the permanent dissatisfaction of the grass being greener. Applied outward, it is an observation about how attraction and value actually work. 6. Elevate your perspective. The law of short-sightedness. Under pressure, we shrink our time horizon and react to the immediate. Green's instruction is to deliberately widen it, to ask what this will look like in a year, to distrust the urgency of the present moment, and to notice that almost every serious error he catalogues was made by someone responding to the last thing that happened. 7. Soften people's resistance by confirming their self-opinion. The law of defensiveness. Everyone carries a self-image and defends it, usually around three things. That they are autonomous and make their own decisions. That they are intelligent and decent. And that they are fundamentally good. Attack any of those, even implicitly, and the person stops listening and starts defending. Confirm them, and resistance falls away. This is the most immediately usable chapter in the book, and it is essentially a chapter about why arguments fail. 8. Change your circumstances by changing your attitude, the law of self-sabotage. Green distinguishes a constricted attitude, which is defensive, hostile, and expects the worst, from an expansive one. His claim is that attitude functions as a filter that shapes what you notice, which shapes what you do, which shapes what happens, which then confirms the attitude. Chekhov is the model here, a man with every reason for a constricted attitude who deliberately built the opposite. 9. Confront your dark side, the law of repression, drawn from Jung. We each construct an acceptable self and disown the rest, and what is disowned does not disappear. It leaks. Green lists the signs. Behavior that contradicts the stated self. Emotional outbursts disproportionate to the trigger. Vehement denial, accidental slips, and above all projection, where the trait you cannot tolerate in yourself is suddenly visible everywhere in others. The goal he calls the integrated human. Someone who has met their own aggression, ambition and selfishness, and can therefore direct them rather than being surprised by them. 10. Beware the fragile ego. The law of envy. Probably the sharpest chapter. Envy is the hardest emotion to detect because it is the one people most conceal, including from themselves. The signals Green gives are specific. The flash of a sneer before the smile, praise that carries a sting, sudden coolness after you share good news, backhanded compliments, a friend who is warm during your difficulties and distant during your success. He also notes the uncomfortable inverse, that the person most likely to feel envy toward you is someone close, similar, and roughly at your level, because envy needs proximity to operate. 11. Know your limits, the law of grandiosity. Success produces an inflation of self-estimate, and the inflation is invisible from inside. The specific danger is that early success convinces people the success was entirely their doing, which strips out the luck and the circumstances and leaves them overconfident about the next thing. 12. Reconnect to the masculine or feminine within you. The law of gender rigidity, drawn from Jung's anima and animus. The argument is that rigid gender conditioning cuts people off from half their repertoire, and that the goal is access to the full range. This is the most dated chapter in the book, and the critique will return to it. 13. Advance with a sense of purpose, the law of aimlessness. Without a sense of direction, Green argues, people are pushed around by circumstance and by other people's agendas, and drift is the default state rather than an aberration. He treats purpose as something discovered through attention to what you were drawn to early and what you cannot stop returning to, rather than something chosen from a list. 14. Resist the downward pull of the group. The law of conformity. Every group generates pressure toward its own norms, lowers the individual intelligence of its members, and produces a court with the usual courtiers. His practical point is that this operates on you invisibly, that you are almost certainly more conformist than you believe, and that the remedy is deliberate periods of distance. 15. Make them want to follow you. The law of fickleness. Authority is not position, it is something granted and continuously renewed by people who can withdraw it. Elizabeth I is his model of someone who understood that she governed at the pleasure of a court that could turn. 16. See the hostility behind the friendly facade, the law of aggression. Green argues that aggression is universal and mostly disguised, and that the passive forms are more common and more damaging than the overt ones. He catalogues chronic aggressors and their tactics, and then makes the reflexive move the book always makes. Your own aggression is also disguised, largely from you, and controlled ambition is what it looks like when it is acknowledged and directed. 17. Seize the historical moment, the law of generational myopia. Each generation is shaped by the conditions of its youth, shares a spirit it cannot see, and defines itself against the one before. Green sketches a repeating cycle across roughly four generational types. This is the other chapter the critique will flag. 18. Meditate on our common mortality, the law of death denial. The closing chapter, and unexpectedly the best in the book. We organize a great deal of life around not thinking about death, and Green's argument, drawn from the Stoics and from Nietzsche, is that this costs more than it saves. Awareness of a limit is what makes anything urgent, what strips away the trivial, and what makes other people's suffering legible. He calls the resulting state the sublime. Few of the frameworks are worth pulling out on their own, and this is the first. Green refuses to treat narcissism as a category that some people are in and others are not. He presents it as a spectrum along which everyone sits, and the position matters more than the label. At the deep end is the person whose sense of self is so unstable that it must be constantly propped up from outside. They require attention continuously. They cannot tolerate criticism because there is no internal structure to absorb it, and they have very little ability to perceive other people as separate beings with their own interior. Green's observation is that they are often initially charming, because a person who needs your attention will work for it. In the middle is functional narcissism, which is most people most of the time. A self-image stable enough to survive an ordinary bad day, with periodic collapses under stress. At the healthy end is a person whose sense of self is solid enough that attention can be turned outward for long stretches, which is the precondition for actually seeing anyone else, which leads to the practical half of the chapter. Green treats empathy as a skill with components, not a personality trait you have or lack. The empathetic attitude is the starting point, accepting that you do not currently understand the other person and that your read on them is probably a projection. Visceral empathy is attention to their physical state, mood, and tone rather than their words. Analytic empathy is the deliberate reconstruction of how the world looks from inside their history and situation, particularly for people very unlike you, where the visceral kind fails. His test for progress is unglamorous and good. Can you predict how a particular person will react to a particular piece of news? If not, you do not understand them yet, whatever you feel about them. The second framework worth extracting and the most immediately practical thing in the book. Green's position is that character is largely formed early, that it is far more stable than people assume, and that it expresses itself as pattern, from which follows the rule, judge people by their track record, not by their explanations, their intentions, or how they make you feel in the room. The observations he offers for reading it are specific. Look at how they treat people who can do nothing for them. Their behavior toward waiters, juniors, and strangers is a better indicator than their behavior toward you, because they are not managing an impression. Look at what happens under pressure, since composure in easy conditions tells you nothing. Look at their history of commitments, whether they finish things, whether their relationships end the same way repeatedly, whether the same problem keeps recurring with different people in the starring role. Look for a pattern of blame. If the failures in someone's account are always caused by someone else, you now have a prediction about the next failure. And be suspicious of the first impression, precisely because that is the part they have rehearsed. He also makes the point that this applies with equal force to you, and that most people cannot describe their own repeating pattern, despite everyone around them being able to. Two more, and they are the chapters people most often say changed something. The shadow is Jung's, and Green uses it directly. In building an acceptable public self, we disown the traits that do not fit. Aggression, ambition, selfishness, envy, cruelty, the desire for attention. Disowning does not remove them, it removes your awareness of them, which means they operate without supervision. The signs he lists are useful because they are observable. Contradictory behavior, where someone's actions do not match the self they describe. Emotional outbursts far out of proportion to the trigger. Vehement denial, where the intensity of the denial is itself the signal. Accidental slips. And projection, the clearest of all, the trait you find intolerable in other people, repeatedly in many different people, is very often the one you cannot tolerate in yourself. Envy gets the most forensic treatment in the book because it is uniquely concealed. Nobody admits to envy, including internally, since admitting it means admitting inferiority. So it is always expressed as something else, as criticism, as concern, as a joke, as principle. Green's detection signals are behavioral, the involuntary flash of a sneer before the social smile arrives. Praise with a barb in it, a distinct cooling when you report good news, and warmth returning when things go badly. Constant subtle comparison, and the pattern of a friendship that flourishes when you are struggling and becomes difficult when you are not. He adds the observation most people find uncomfortable. The likeliest source of envy is not a stranger or a rival, but someone close to you, similar to you, and at roughly your level, because envy requires a plausible comparison. Distance kills it. And once again, the reflexive turn. Your own envy is equally concealed from you, and it usually arrives disguised as a principled objection to someone's success. The last two frameworks, and they are the ones that give the book its shape. On purpose, Green's position is that aimlessness is the default state and not a personal failing. Without a direction of your own, you will be moved by other people's, by whatever is urgent, and by the accumulated pressure of circumstance. He does not treat purpose as something you select. He treats it as something you recover by paying attention to what you were pulled toward before anyone was watching, and to the activities you return to without needing to be motivated. He is also clear that a sense of purpose does the work of filtering. Most opportunities are only appealing in the absence of a direction. On mortality, the closing chapter, he argues that the denial of death is culturally organized and personally expensive. Because we behave as though time is unlimited, we defer. We tolerate what we should not tolerate. We treat trivial things as significant, and we experience other people's suffering as something happening to a different category of person. Sustained awareness of the limit, he claims, does the opposite. It compresses the trivial. It makes the choice of what to spend a decade on urgent rather than theoretical. And it produces a specific kind of fellow feeling, because mortality is the one condition that is genuinely universal. He borrows the word sublime for the resulting state, and he is drawing on the Stoics, on Montaigne, and on Nietzsche's affirmation. The argument is not that death should be feared less, it is that the fear should be turned into attention. For a book that opens with the mechanics of manipulation and social reading, ending here is an unusual choice, and it is the reason a lot of readers rate this above everything else Green has written. This is a better book than The 48 Laws, and it has real weaknesses. The method is unchanged, and it is the central problem. History is illustration, not evidence. Every chapter selects a life that demonstrates the law and narrates it so that it does. There are no countercases, no consideration of how many people showed the same trait and had the opposite outcome, and no way for a reader to test any of it. It is a very persuasive form and a very weak one. The psychology is largely Jungian and Freudian, and much of that framework is not empirically supported. The shadow, the anima and animus, the archetypes, these are clinically evocative and they are not findings. Green presents them with the same confidence he applies to better supported material, and the reader is given no way to tell the difference. The gender chapter is the weakest. It rests on Jung's anima and animus, and it treats masculine and feminine as stable psychological categories that individuals are cut off from. That framing has aged poorly, sits awkwardly with contemporary understanding of gender, and is the chapter most reviewers single out. The generational chapter is close to pseudoscience. Cyclical generational theory of the kind Green sketches is popular in business writing and is regarded by most historians and social scientists as unfalsifiable pattern matching. Generations are not coherent psychological units, the boundaries are arbitrary, and the effects usually attributed to generational spirit are better explained by age, period, and specific events. Microexpressions are shakier than presented. The idea that brief involuntary facial movements reliably reveal concealed emotion is contested. The accuracy of trained detection is much lower than popular accounts suggest, and reading strangers from faces is one of the areas where confident people are reliably wrong. The framework is unfalsifiable in the same way his earlier book is. 18 laws, each with a negative pole and a positive pole, will explain any behavior after the fact. And it is long and repetitive. Every chapter runs the same structure, and the case studies, while well told, take a great deal of space to deliver a point that is often stated fully in a paragraph. What survives is genuinely valuable. The insistence on judging people by pattern rather than by statement is sound and underused. The chapter on defensiveness is an excellent practical account of why arguments fail. The envy material is unusually precise and describes something real that most people have experienced without a name for it. And the closing chapter on mortality is simply good and does not depend on any of the contested science. The thing that makes this book worth the 600 pages is the move Green makes at the start of every chapter, and that most readers skip past. He tells you that you have the trait. Not that other people have it, and here is how to spot them. Though he tells you that too, but that the narcissism, the defensiveness, the envy, the aggression, and the self-deception under discussion are yours, currently operating, largely invisible to you, and being observed by everyone around you. Whether or not the Jungian scaffolding holds, that instruction is the useful one. The reason we read other people badly is not usually a lack of technique. It is that we are looking through a self we have never examined and mistaking the distortion for the view. That was the summary of The Laws of Human Nature by Robert Greene. This narration is an original summary and commentary. It is not psychological advice, and it is not a substitute for the book. If it caught you, read the real thing. From the AIIIO Book Library, thank you for listening.